Sorry about that. Trying to get the buttons to work right. Hey, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials on this beautiful, beautiful day. It's gorgeous outside. Yesterday evening, I was listening to something on the radio as I was driving from Jacksonville back to Tyler, and it was very, very interesting. They were talking about a mysterious illness that's all of a sudden breaking out in the northern part of China. I'm not really familiar with all the provinces of China and the geography. I think I know a little bit more about the United States and about Texas, but to make a long story short, the hospitals are being overrun by this mysterious upper respiratory tract illness and a really, really bad pneumonia, especially in kids and those that are college age. So if you want to say 18 to 25, okay, I got it. So, but what I thought of is, what do we actually do? Do we just wait till we get sick and then respond, or do we do things to help ourselves in a concerted effort to make sure you have the very best possible chance to heal and repair yourself? Okay. Well, I came across this article, and this was published January the 24th, 2023. I'm going to read this to you. Just let this be food for thought. Consider this, especially for your arsenal when it comes to your immune system. Okay. What they did in the study was, it took place in Tunisia. Just because it's Tunisia doesn't mean it's not valid. Okay, here it is right here. Here's the study. Doctors from Fatouma Bourguiba University Hospital in Tunisia, they published a study in January 2023 in which 460 COVID patients participate as test subjects. Okay, so they're looking at people that have a very problematic viral infection. Some of the subjects were admitted to the hospital, and some were not. You can bet your bottom dollar, if you are admitted to the hospital with COVID, not a good situation to be in. Would you agree with that? Okay. The researchers conducted a randomized trial in which one half of the subjects received a placebo for 15 days, while the other half took a supplement two times each day during that period. And that supplement provided 25 milligrams of elemental zinc. And so if I'm doing my math correct, 2 times 25 is 50, so for a very short period, that would be, what, 2 weeks? Excuse me, 15 days, they took 50 milligrams of zinc a day. You may want to make a note of that. The researchers monitored the subjects during the supplementation period, and then for an additional 15 days beyond that. So you could say this is a one-month study. You got to understand that the very patients that were actually admitted to the emergency room in the hospital, this is serious. They're in a very bad place. If you show up at the hospital in the ER and they put you in ICU, that is not a good situation to be in. And you're probably curious, well, what can I do to protect myself? Okay, here's the results right here. In the placebo group, now these were 460 people, just randomly, you know, chosen. 9.2% of the, that's not exactly 10%, but pretty close. If they showed up to the hospital, they died, okay? Those that showed up to the hospital but were given zinc, only 6.5% died. What this means is that the zinc supplementation reduced the risk of death in a severe infection with SARS-CoV-2 by 42%. Now, that may not seem like a significant number, but you know what? We don't know anything about these people at all. I have no idea what the level of health was like for the people that showed up with COVID. It doesn't tell us that. All they're doing is looking at the people that showed up. Did they take good care of themselves? Did they have a good diet? How much stress were they under? Had they had a bunch of previous infections? If you say Tunisia, I'm thinking, did they have tuberculosis? I mean, there's just all these other issues, but we don't know that. All we're looking at is they started giving them zinc once they showed up sick. Half got zinc, half didn't. Now listen to this right here. So the risk of dying was cut by 42% when they gave them zinc once they showed up. The ones that got zinc, I'm sorry, compared to the placebo group that did not get the zinc. Okay, here's the next one. Zinc supplementation, it halved the chance of admission to the ICU. That means if you showed up really sick, your chance of going to the intensive care unit was cut in half. And so does that kind of make you pay attention to maybe taking zinc if you get sick? What I'm probably building to is a point. What if we actually started trying to optimize zinc? I'm not saying that that's optimal. Okay, what's the rest of it? Then I'll start taking some phone calls here. Oh, here's the one right here. It said they noticed, especially in people that were over 65 years of age, with underlying diseases. That means you had a disease. If that was heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, high blood pressure, organ failure. When they were above 65 with a disease, zinc definitely played a huge role in protecting them from even being admitted to the ICU and again death. So this is what it looks like. If you were above 65 and you showed up with diseases while you had the COVID, number one, it protects against having to go to the ICU. That's a home run right there. Number two, it's like a death protection policy just by taking zinc. You don't want to die? Take zinc. It says, here's another one right here, another takeaway. They go on to say from this university study that zinc supplementation shortened the period the subjects were in the hospital by just over 3 days. Okay? If you have to go to the hospital, folks, getting out 3 days, over 3 days earlier than everybody else that's not taking zinc, that again is a home run. You're probably asking yourself the question, I wonder if zinc has something to do with how efficiently and how effectively the immune system does its job at getting you back in good repair. Well, yeah. Here's another one right here. In the subjects who were not in the hospital, okay, these are people that were never admitted, it says zinc supplementation reduced the duration of the disease by 2 days. So if you weren't quite sick enough to go to the hospital or ICU, if you took zinc, you got over it 2 days sooner. All the symptoms. Don't you think that's like a pretty good deal? Let me see. here's what the leader of the study said from this hospital in Tunisia. I'm just going to quote him. I'm quoting him. Zinc should be considered for the treatment of patients with COVID-19. Okay. You know what happens if you don't die? That's called healing. It has to take place. You know what not healing is called? That's called dying. Anyway, if you'd like to join me on the radio, I'm here today. The last two Saturdays, I've had to attend continuing education classes so I can maintain my license. That's a good thing. And so the number here at the station is 903-589-8507. Let me give that out one more time. I realize this is a new number that we're working with. 903-589-8507. In case you want to call. Okay. Here's another one right here that I came across and I thought is really, really good. You know, and this one to me is also so interesting. And I'll kind of flesh it out for you. I'll try to make it sound simple. If you were to go to the health food store, or even a store that sells every type and manner of nutritional supplement or a remedy. And my interpretation is, if you're trying to buy a supplement, whether it's vitamin C or it's zinc or it's elderberry, whatever it is, you're trying to help yourself. If you say, my doctor just did a blood report and it shows that my vitamin D levels are low, well, you would be one smart cookie if you started supplementing with vitamin D. Might actually be a good idea to actually get out in the sunlight and let the radiant energy of the sun touch your skin so your body can regain its ability to start producing adequate amounts of vitamin D3. And like anything else, there's levels of supplementation that are Goldilocks just right, meaning they tend to fulfill all the needs the body has, and there's deficiency. And, for example, that's one of the ways that cancer grows in the human body or in an animal, when there is a deficiency. That would be one of the criteria that would make it easy for cancer to grow, in the presence of a frank deficiency. Okay. Here's a study right here. It says, and I'm just going to read the title. I know these things are wordy, but to me it's kind of interesting. This comes from Food Science and Nutrition 2023, September 20th. So this is hot off the press. It says, effects of six-month creatine supplementation. And let me just stop right there for a second. Do you know what creatine is? A lot of times creatine is a substance that you can purchase. It's a white powder. Sometimes it's called creatine monohydrate. I think that's the form they used in this one right here. And they may say in parentheses, just after the term creatine monohydrate, they may say the word micronized. Okay? So here's the title. Effects of six-month creatine supplementation on patient and clinician report outcomes and tissue creatine levels in patients with post-COVID-19 fatigue syndrome. Okay? Maybe you don't know exactly what that's referring to, but they're talking about people that have many lingering problems that just don't go away once they've had COVID-19. Okay, I'm going to jump right into it. This study was done in Serbia. Serbian scientists affiliated with the University of Novi Sad, they reported earlier in 2023 they had found less creatine in muscles and brains of people with long COVID. Okay, you with me on that? Comes from the journal Postgrad Medicine 2023, July through September. All right, creatine. Well, what is that? That's an amino acid. If you want to call it a protein, well, proteins are composed of amino acids. It says, based on these research results, the researchers wondered, what happens if people that have long COVID are given creatine? In the study that is the subject of this post, the Serbs tried to answer that question. Okay. Now, this is a small study, but I like it. Okay. The researchers experiment with 12 test subjects aged 18 to 65 who had COVID-19 the past 3 months, but they still suffered from residual symptoms such as breathing problems. You know what it's like not to be able to have enough oxygen or air? They also had a loss of smell and taste. You may have experienced that. They had this continual annoying chest pain. It wasn't because they were having a heart attack, it's just their chest. It was a residual ache and pain. They had continual headaches, or they had concentration problems. Maybe we would call that, here in East Texas, brain fog. Half of the subjects received 4 grams of creatine every day for 6 months. I kind of like studies like this because there's something to be said about once you start something being very consistent for a while. What they're doing is they're feeding the tissues of the body, the muscles, the substance called creatine. 4 grams. That's probably like less than a teaspoon. That is not what I would call very much. Okay. I have all the charts right here. That doesn't do you a lick of good, but let me say this right here. In the group that was taking creatine monohydrate, there was a very significant, statistically significant reduction in the long COVID symptoms, such as absence of taste and smell, breathing problems, lack of oxygen, chest pain. Actually, to be more precise, they were talking about pain that was in their lungs. It just would not go away. Body aches, headaches, and concentration problems or brain fog, they started to go away. Okay? Now, if I look at the chart, obviously you can't. Let me see if I can figure this out right here. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Morgan. Hi.
I'm sorry. I accidentally hung up on you. Call right back again. Okay, are you there? Okay, are you there? Okay, just when I thought I had the phone system completely figured out, it switched around on me. So it's doing something differently now. Anyway, all right, to the best of my knowledge, the number here at the station is 903-589-8507. Okay, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Are you there?
Nope. I'm sorry. We're back where we started from. It's not working again. The number here at the station is 903-589-8507. Okay, well, you know what they say, when it rains, it pours. Let's try it one more time. Good morning, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Morgan.
Nope, it ain't working, I'm so sorry. Okay, I'm completely lost with this one. I have no idea how it works. After I went through a spell there where they changed it around, so... Anyway, we're back to where we started from. I'm so sorry, folks. I really enjoy taking phone calls. That's actually easier than me talking because I get to actually respond to like a good question. Anyway, I have this chart in front of me that's showing people that have problems with long COVID. They just can't get well. They can't get their strength back. Now, I'm not going to go into huge amounts of detail, but I do believe that the coronavirus that's known to cause COVID, SARS, you know, that's a different animal. I really have a very, very difficult time wrapping my head around the idea that's just normal. Anyway, enough of that. So, here's one of the questions they're asking. I'm going to try to make it sound simple for you. If you look at foods that are found in nature that are just naturally occurring and have a good amount of creatine, that would be called red meat. And I would say there's a huge difference between animals that are, you know, cows that are fed massive amounts of hormones, antibiotics, the farmer sprays Roundup. I mean, they're literally, every other commercial on television is about Roundup causing cancer, lymphoma, leukemia, probably bladder cancer too, kidney cancer. I just wonder, what does it take before we figured out that stuff is deadly to the human body? This whole deal with wheat and gluten intolerance, sometimes I think maybe the bigger issue is it's really a Roundup issue. One of my patients was telling me that wheat farmers, they may spray Roundup like 4 or 5 times during the course of the wheat growing season and harvesting, or everything that goes along with that. But that's Roundup is deadly. Anyway, so If you can get your hands on grass-fed meat that comes from a cow, and the farmer, the rancher, the cattleman, or her, they don't use all these chemicals, now we've got something quality to talk about where we can actually start feeding the body. But red meat is an excellent source of creatine. The other one is going to be food that comes from the ocean. I mean, the ocean is incredible, the amount of nutrition that you get. So you have to eat those things. But what they're noticing is when these people cannot get well from COVID, they tend to be very low in creatine. Now, yes, you can just go straight to the health food store, or you can go online and you can purchase it. In this study, they just used 4 grams a day. I would say that's very, very modest of a dose. That's not what I would call very much at all. Quite often, creatine is the very substance that a bodybuilder, or an athlete, I should say, that's probably more correct, somebody that goes to the gym and they want to get the biggest bang for the buck from their workout. Because creatine has been shown to increase the quality of the workout. Well, you tell me. If you were to go to the gym and you're just dragging your feet and you can just barely move yourself on the treadmill, and you look at the dumbbells and you say, I just don't have the strength today, what am I supposed to do? Well, creatine may be one of the very things that helps, because one of the simple things, I say simple, it's highly complicated, but I'm going to try to make it sound simple. Creatine has been shown to help improve how the mitochondria, these are the little engines of all the cells of the body. You've got thousands of mitochondria in certain types of cells. They need to get fuel in order to make energy for you. Just like your car requires oxygen coming into the engine, and it also needs a fuel, whether that be, you know, gasoline, or what's another one? Diesel? I started to say electricity. You know what I mean. But you've got to if you're going to get power to the wheels of your car, you've got to be able to get gas from the fuel tank. You know, it's got to be pumped by the fuel pump into the engine so it can be injected, you know, with the help of fuel injection technology, I guess, in order to generate power. Well, I'm not saying that the human muscle, I'm not saying that your muscle cell or a liver cell or a heart muscle cell is the same as an engine, but you got to have oxygen. What would you say is the most important element to life? That's right, oxygen. You're not going to make it very far without oxygen. So creatine has this amazing ability. It's just doing its job. The reason that God designed it, or one of them that we know of, is that when you consume creatine, it helps transfer or transport fuel across the mitochondrial membrane. And I'll tell you this, if you cannot produce energy, you cannot repair the body. This is a huge, huge, huge deal. If anyone is listening this morning and they're completely physically spent and exhausted, well, there's only one way through this. We have absolutely got to find a way for your body to produce energy. Energy is the ticket for getting your body back into good repair. You want to get back to good? You want to get back to feeling right again? Well, folks, that takes energy. And so when you eat red meat, you're eating a boatload of creatine. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think absolutely the highest collagen-containing food on the planet is probably red meat. And so if a person has a digestive weakness, and they say, I can't eat red meat, Dr. Morgan, because if I eat it, it's just all I do is burp it and belch it. Well, it's probably exposing that they have a significant weakness in digesting protein. They might need to supplement with a little bit of hydrochloric acid or some type of protein digesting enzyme. I think 2 weeks ago a woman was telling me she has no issues if she takes her enzymes that are based on papaya. And I thought, okay, sounds like a home run. Keep it up. But back to this study, when the people that had long COVID symptoms took creatine, I'm looking at the chart right here. Difficulties concentrating. That was a home run. They started to go away, meaning they had greater mental clarity. They could think more clearly. If you can think more clearly and the brain fatigue and the brain fog go away, well, what does that tell you? You can probably accomplish so much more throughout the day and stay on task. Because you know how this life is. There's work at every turn. Would you rather feel good while you're doing the work, or would you rather it be a struggle? And I guess the other thing I'm probably suggesting to myself is, what if you can get the work done in 2 hours and it's still high-quality work versus taking 10 hours to get the same job done? Well, I vote we do the 2 hours. The headaches improved. And the other big one on the chart is body aches. You know as well as I do that without inflammation, you're not going to have pain. Part of the immune system's job is to remove damaged tissues and damaged cells. That's kind of the whole reason behind exercise or training. You know, like resistance training, like lifting dumbbells or doing a push-up or doing squats or going to the gym and doing a bench press or, you know what I mean, something like that where you have to push against something and that's very hard to do. Well, what are you doing there? You're trying to replace the old, weak, damaged cells with stronger cells. That's what happens when you put stress upon the muscles. They show that physical fatigue and general fatigue greatly, greatly improved with creatine. And they did it both at 3 months and at 6 months. And the message here is the longer you take it, the better. When you eat seafood, let's just say you love the taste of flounder, or there's a lot of people, they do not like fish, but they will eat salmon. Okay, that's a deal. I'll take it. You're trying to give your body the nutrients that it requires for healing. Now, this is just a slight variance from this conversation about creatine helping the body get over COVID-19 symptoms. But wouldn't it be the same conversation? Isn't this what would be called healing and repair? And you have to understand, creatine is a natural substance. It's found in nature. Now, if your mitochondria need it, and your muscles need it, and your heart needs it, then if you're sick, I'm trying to give you some hope here. Because the one way through this is we've got to find a way absolutely for the human body to generate more energy. Okay? If you can do two things, if you can vastly improve the quality of one's sleep, if your sleep gets better, you know, if you can generate more energy, that's a home run. A lady told me something last week, and I thought it was just pure genius. I'm going to share it with you. She was saying that her husband, he asked her a question every evening when he first sees her, when she gets in from work or he gets in. She may have said that he does a lot of work from home. Yeah, I think it's what she said. But she said, "How are you today?" And she says, "Well, I'm at a 60. And I just love the idea of this. But he's actually trying to get an idea. What does she feel like when she gets in from teaching school all day long? And if she says she's a 60, that means she's kind of at 60%. Does that make sense? And so he might take that information and say, "Well, what can I do? Can I cook supper? Can I bathe the kids? Can I help with this? What can I do to make life easy for you?" But could you imagine if she walked in the door and he said, "Hey, sweetheart, how you doing?" And she says, I'm at a 15. Well, that means her battery is completely drained. And she might say, I've got to take a shower and go straight to bed. I just can't do it. And you know what? Human beings, we have stuff like that. We're fragile. I would say the human body is a very high-maintenance vehicle. And you've got to have some type of plan. What are you going to do to take good care of it? Now, the reason I like that is because what a good husband he is, asking about how his wife's doing. I like that very, very much. But you start to get an idea that the body has got to have energy. Sometimes I think it's remarkable if I have a day where a person says, you know what, I'm a high-energy person. And I feel really, really good all the time. And I think to myself, oh, this is going to be an easy deal here because I have energy. Energy is the currency of the body. So whatever we can do to build energy, that is a home run. Now, I did mention earlier, I don't know if you caught it or not, but I'm being, since the phone lines don't work, I've got to talk about something. So, and I've kind of alluded to this throughout the program, but for cancer to occur, to form in the human body, there's three things that have to take place. Number one, there's got to be a deficiency. Okay? That means there's some element, and I'll just say oxygen, for example, or the trace mineral selenium. But there's got to be, or zinc, there's got to be something that you're deficient in. And the idea of a deficiency is, if you're lacking the very thing that you need, you can't expect to have radiant health, because something's going to go undone. Could you imagine if you went to the doctor this week and they did labs, and in the course of the lab test, they measured your vitamin D3 levels, which I think is a good idea. That's pretty smart. And as they measure the vitamin D levels, they give you the report and they say, your vitamin D3 levels at the number 7. And you're going, okay, what does that mean to me? And they say, well, you know, a normal somewhere between 30 and, say, 70 or 100. And you're going, well, what does that mean at 7? Ma'am, you are severely deficient. And so I think the vitamin D is a pretty good example. When you're low in vitamin D, you have the highest risk of developing heart disease. Blood pressure almost always goes up when you're lacking vitamin D. You tend to have much higher death rates in individuals when you're low in vitamin D. That may be one of the reasons why death rates begin to spike upwards when we get close to wintertime. You know, it's colder outside. People don't want to go out and sunbathe, or they don't want to work in the yard where sun can strike their skin so they can start generating it. Yeah, that's a factor. But my main point is this. When you don't have enough of the very elements you need, such as vitamin D, there's going to be a bunch of stuff that goes undone. There's just not enough to go around. I mean, if all your kids called you and said, Dad, we need $100 right now, and you say, I've got $57 in my bank account, well, you can't give $100 to all of them. You can give out small amounts. But that's what happens to the body. There's a lot of good healing, repair, immune activity that goes undone when you have a deficiency. So it's very easy, or relatively easier, for cancer to occur in the body when you have a deficiency. Does that make sense? And even though briefly I talked about Roundup just a while ago, Roundup is a toxic substance. It's a poison. So if you poison your body, are you going to be shocked or surprised if you develop cancer? The last time I checked, if you want to develop lung cancer, well, what should you do to do that? Well, it's been well established. If you smoke a boatload of cigarettes, you're asking over time to develop lung cancer. Now, the good news is there are studies that show that if you're free of cigarettes for like, what is it? Is it 7 years? You're just like back down to zero. It's like you never smoked before. How encouraging is that? That if you just stop smoking cigarettes, you can start to repair and undo all the damage that was caused by them. Does that make sense? Okay. Well, we know also that if you spray Roundup every day on a farm, there's a higher probability you're going to develop a leukemia or a lymphoma. The stuff is that toxic. Who has the highest amount of bladder cancer? Well, it's farmers that maintain their pesticide, herbicide, chemical license, right? Okay. Just simple numbers right there. Okay, so if you have a deficiency, that creates the right environment for cancer to grow, because your body just can't keep itself in good repair. And basically, if your human organism or your cells are breaking down faster, than what they're repairing, you're going to have problems, because the last time I checked, all tissues are made of cells. And tissues comprise glands and organs. It's all made of cells. And if your cells aren't healthy, how can you expect your immune system to be healthy? Well, it can't. All right? So we've got deficiency, we've got toxicity. What is the last little thing that cancer really, really needs to really take off and grow? And I realize this is probably too much information to dive into, but the more I study cancer, the more I think it's a metabolic disease. It's a disease of energy, or the lack thereof. And so, if you want cancer to grow in the body, just be really, really fatigued. It's a pretty good way to do it. So when I talk about creatine, why don't we make it easy for the body to heal and repair itself? It's probably a conversation about protein also. Okay. What else do I have right here? Here's another one right here. Now this article caught my attention. And it's about zinc, but it caught my attention for like a pretty simple reason. Here's the title. This was published December 21st, 2016. American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Randomized Controlled Trial. Okay. Here's the title. A moderate increase in dietary zinc reduces DNA strand breaks in your leukocytes and alters plasma proteins without changing the plasma zinc concentration. That's interesting. Well, what does that mean in the real world? Do you want to help yourself? Do you want to give your immune system a chance to function better? Is there a way that we can actually help ourselves? Well, yes. Here it is right here. Researchers from the Children's Hospital Oakland Research Institute in the United States published a small intervention study in 2017 in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition in which 18 healthy men aged 19 to 45 participated as the subjects. So that means they were healthy men, they had no health problems, they were in great working order, they were not diseased. And this is all they did right here. I'm not sure how they always do these things, but just listen to this. So these men were healthy, 19 to 45 years of age, no diseases. So it says this, the researchers gave their subjects a diet for a period of 2 weeks. And what that means is they did their best to organize what they were going to eat, quantify it, decide what they could eat and what they couldn't eat, and just dot all the I's and cross all the T's to design this diet. But here's the kicker. For 2 weeks, they had to eat this food that the researchers came up with, or the diet, but they wanted to make sure that the diet would only provide these men with 6 milligrams of zinc a day. I really don't know what that looks like because I haven't read it, but this is basically a low-zinc diet. Are you with me on that? Okay. Now, according to Mainstream Insights, or the RDA, the Recommended Daily Allotment or Allowance, adult men need approximately 10 milligrams of zinc a day, or that's what some people say. So, by the way, according to the same insight, they say the maximum intake of zinc a day for a man is going to be at 25 milligrams. So they constructed this diet where these men could only get 6 milligrams of zinc a day. It says after the 2 weeks, the subjects were given a diet that provided 10 milligrams of zinc daily. And the intervention lasted for, they did that for 4 weeks, so the intervention lasted for a total of 6 weeks. So for the first 2 weeks, they got 6 milligrams of zinc a day. The next 4 weeks, they got 10 milligrams, which is kind of like the ultimate bare minimum. So I'm thinking, well, what could they learn from that? So just before they did this intervention diet, on the last day of the low zinc period and on the last day before the moderate zinc period, the researchers drew blood and they analyzed the blood of these test subjects, okay? The researchers studied the subject's blood cells with the Alkaline Comet Assay and the FPG Comet Assay test. I really don't know what that is. I mean, I have sort of an idea, but I'm not really super familiar with it. Both research methods measure the damage to the hereditary material of the cells. This is your DNA. The larger the values, the more damage of the DNA of the cells has suffered. So, I'm kind of going back to the cancer conversation because you need deficiency, toxicity, and you need low energy, okay? After the low zinc period, when they drew their blood at the two-week mark, you know, they were just getting 6 milligrams of zinc a day, they noticed the damage to the man's DNA increased significantly. And then when they gave the men for 4 weeks a diet that had 10 milligrams, and, you know, I know what you're thinking, probably the same as what I'm thinking. Is there really that big of a difference in how your body functions, whether you get 10 milligrams of zinc a day or you get 6 milligrams of zinc? Well, I've got a table right here. You can't see it. I can. It says a low zinc intake reduced the concentration of enzymes that repair damaged DNA. So it says it right there. When your diet is low in zinc, your body doesn't make the enzymes that you need to keep your body or your DNA in good repair. So does that make sense? When you're low in something, your body can't repair itself, okay? It says enzymes that neutralize antioxidants and enzymes that inhibit inflammation, well, they were lacking. Inflammation is how your body repairs itself, and chronic inflammation, boy, does that cause problems. So these enzymes need zinc in order to work properly, in order to do their job. In contrast, the concentration of enzymes that stimulate inflammation increased. But when they gave them 10 milligrams of zinc, all of a sudden everything began to normalize. They started going back to normal. Does that make sense? I'm sorry. I know that I would greatly prefer to take a phone call, but the phone line is not working again. I don't know what to tell you. It's just not working. So I will put in a call or I'll leave a text to somebody, maybe Randy. I think JP is maybe on vacation this week. But to make a long story short, I'll put in a call to somebody, see if we can't look into the phone lines. As far as I know, I have like all the buttons pushed that should be pushed. Okay. Sorry about that. Otherwise, I'd be taking a lot of phone calls, and that would be fun. Okay. So, we're switching gears here slightly, but still the same topic. How do we get the body to heal itself? And so, what did we just learn? We just learned that there's an optimal level for zinc. Am I saying that 10 milligrams is optimal? No. But it normalized just about everything in the cells where your body could repair itself. That is a very good situation to be in. So what I want you to think of is, what can you do to start helping yourself? If your attitude is, I'm just going to wait till I show up at the ER and see what the doctor says, and if they put me in ICU, they'll take... Well, you don't want to go there. You don't. I have these conversations so frequently with people, and they're so distressed because they talk about what... Because I always ask them, what happened when you went to the ER? What tests did they do? How did they examine you? Did they do this or this or this? And it's just learning. I'm just trying to figure it out, like, you know, they are. And they're frustrated. They want help. So what I'm going to recommend is, you start the process today to make up your mind that you're going to be a good steward of this body that God's given you, and you're going to ask yourself, what can I do to take better care of myself? So when I talk about these things like creatine or zinc, I'm giving you plenty of clues on what you could do to actually help yourself. How can you help yourself get stronger? How can you be healthier? And, you know, another way of looking at this may sound just a wee bit negative maybe. You really can't afford to get sick. Do you know how expensive it is to go to the emergency room? Yes, I know you're in pain and you probably need to go. But you could spend years just paying off a simple ER bill if you could even get to that point. It's just so expensive. And so don't get me wrong, I'm so thankful that we have all these hospital facilities. Some of them are like the most amazing buildings. I mean, they're beautiful architectural structures. Very pleasing to the eye. They're very impressive. But they don't build them for free, do they? All this is very expensive. So, I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying, take good care of your body and learn to do what it takes to keep your body in good repair. Okay? Here's another article I copied off. I think I copied this one off last night because it kind of caught my attention. A lot of times I'll just sit down at the computer and I'll start looking at articles and see what I can come up with. And if I don't know something, I'm going, that's interesting. Let me type that in. What does that say? This comes from, the journal Complementary Therapies and Medicine. I think that's a pretty popular one. Volume 74, and that was published June of 2023. Okay, so this is a brand spanking new. And so here it is. They're saying, what are the effects of curcumin or turmeric supplementation on liver function in adults? And I know this is technical. It says a grade assessed systematic review and dose response meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials. And you're thinking, what does that have to do with anything? Well, let me read the study to you, and we'll kind of flesh it out right here. And by the way, I heard a doctor one time say, he said, you know what God's diet is? So he had my attention, and I thought, I wonder what he's going to say. He says, if it grows as a root in the garden, if it comes from a tree that's in the garden, if it walks in the garden, if it swims in the sea, and what I would add is if it flies like a bird in the air, then you can eat it. And so you start asking yourself, do Twinkies and donuts, do those come from the garden? Well, no, they don't. That's kind of a madman proposition right there. Okay, here's a study right here. Muhammad Jafar Dehaz De Zad, I mispronounced his name, forgive me, affiliated with Shiraz University of Medical Sciences in Iran, collected 31 previously published trials in which the subjects were given supplements with just two things, either turmeric or curcumin. Have you ever heard of those two? If you want to call them spices, if you want to call them herbs. Have you ever been to a restaurant and had curry? Have you ever had French's yellow mustard? Well, yeah, that's turmeric and curcumin right there. So, he's looking at all these published trials in which subjects were given supplements that had either turmeric or curcumin in them. And then the researchers measured the effect on liver enzymes. If you don't know what liver enzymes are, there's a simple blood test your doctor just ordered last week. It's called a comprehensive metabolic panel. I like that blood test. And a couple of the things they measure is usually an enzyme called ALT and then another one called AST. And so they can measure these enzymes in the person's blood. And so you, as a general rule, there's a normal range that these liver enzymes, ALT and AST, function in. I'd probably call them the Goldilocks just right range. And when they're in that range, that usually means your liver is purring like a kitten. It's like a diesel engine just running on autopilot, doing a great job. But as those numbers begin to go up, you know, ALT and AST, that means your liver is having to work a whole lot harder and endure a lot more trauma and inflammation than what it needs to. And so what Dr. Dehazed did, he took a step back and he tried to find out, Is there really a safe, effective way to help somebody that has elevated liver enzymes by using turmeric and curcumin? Alrighty. And so, here's the results right here. Supplementation with curcumin and turmeric reduced the concentration of the liver enzymes ALT and AST by 4.1 and 3.9 points respectively. Of course, I've got the graph right here. So, they're saying that's statistically significant. All right. There was a trend that he saw for supplementation to decrease the concentration of what's called GGT. That's another liver enzyme. So if you go to the doctor and you have elevated liver enzymes, I'm not saying it's 100%, but that's a pretty good indication that you may have what's called a fatty liver. And what you need to know about that is you've got way too much fat taking up space in your liver, and so your liver cannot function as efficiently as it should. And so what do we want to do? Well, what do we do to help heal the liver? Well, you have to do your job. I would tell you this. This might be a side note, but I still think it's the same topic of helping the liver. The more you eat at home, the healthier your liver is going to be. The more that you eat out, well, that's when it makes it really, really difficult to help somebody's liver to get well. So, could you imagine if the only thing that a person drinks is soda water? Well, it's going to be nearly impossible to get the liver well. High fructose corn syrup is so, so hard on the liver. It is. Okay, when the Iranians broke down their data, they could not find a clear relationship between the doses and duration, the use and type of preparation, one hand on the effects of the liver or the other, blah, blah, blah. So what they're saying is, they noticed that curcumin or turmeric that had better ratings for increased bioavailability, meaning it was absorbed better, utilized by the body better, that was the best choice. They got the best results from that. So I use a product called Turmeric Forte, and it's exactly that. It's got greatly increased bioavailability. Okay, so what's the conclusion? If you have high levels of ALT and AST showing that your liver is inflamed, stressed out, not in a good place, you're sick, you might want to take some curcumin or turmeric. I'm trying to think. Anyway, you know what's hard on the liver? High fructose corn syrup. But then again, if you said to me, well, is drinking a diet soft drink that's sweetened with sucralose or Splenda, is that any better? No. I think I covered this topic, but there was a study that was just recently published, and they demonstrated conclusively that if you're a pregnant mother, which means you got a baby growing in your womb, that if you drink one diet soft drink a day, it's just about a given guaranteed. You don't want this guarantee, but you want to have a child that has autism? The chances are really, really high, the highest chances of all, if you're drinking artificial sugar. Another one that came out about a year ago, they showed people that drink a diet soda every day, they have like 300 to 400% more Alzheimer's and dementia. Okay? It's just amazing. All right. So, what do you do if you're trying to avoid all these toxins? Well, you eat at home. And what that might mean is you need to spend some time in preparation. I'm trying to think. When I was a boy, I think we were living in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. My mom was a cook. Maybe she was old school. I think that's a good thing. But she was a stay-at-home mom. She didn't have to work. My dad was a worker. Even though my dad went through many, many jobs, he never, ever, I don't think my dad once ever took what's called unemployment or any handouts. I do remember, though, when we were very young, we went to the food bank to get cheese and butter, I think. Yeah, I'm almost positive. Yeah, okay. because I remember these big blocks of cheddar cheese. It was good, too. But I think that's the one handout that we took when we were going through like a rough patch. But my mother was always there. She had this magical way of knowing exactly when my dad was going to come in the door and she would have supper ready for him. She used to take a round steak, I know, and she had a, what do you call them, meat tenderizers? that's called a hammer with spikes on the end of it, and she would work the meat over. But she knew exactly what my father liked and what would, you know, give him the best chance to feel good when he came home from work and satisfy him. But I remember we used to have, there were two desserts that we were given occasionally. I don't think we were given desserts like, hey, kids, you want some Pop-Tarts or do you want some donuts or cookies? No. That was like a rare, rare deal. But for dessert, there were two that we would have. One of them, she would take a bed of lettuce and just tear the leaves off, put it flat on the plate. And she would take a pear and half it and peel it. And then once she would put the pear on the bed of lettuce, then she would put a scoop of mayonnaise and then grate cheese all over it. Does that sound like an old-fashioned dessert for kids? Well, of course. It's a pear with cheese. You may not know this, so I'll tell you, so you will. But there seems to be a very high association with longevity and cheese consumption. You're probably thinking, Dr. Morgan, you're making this up. Everybody knows that cheese is full of cholesterol, but no. Maybe cheese is actually a superfood. But they've done studies and they have observed that when people live a very, very long time, usually cheese is part of their diet. Not diet soft drinks, not fake food, but cheese. That's real food. If I milked a cow, we had a Guernsey growing up, but if I milked the cow and just left the glass there in the barn, what would happen to that milk? Well, it would turn to cheese, wouldn't it, if you give it a long enough time? Every single time. Anyway, the other thing is, the other dessert is my mother would make her own Jell-O. And you can just get the plain Knox gelatin, but she would put fruit in it. But she would put it in a blender, and I think she used half and half. She would blend it up and she would take shredded coconut, knowing my mother was probably unsweetened coconut because she was like not a big fan of sugar. But she would take and make blended Jell-O and then sprinkle shredded or toasted coconut on top of it. You talk about good. Now, you tell me, which one is going to build the human body? The pear with the cheese and the lettuce? The gelatin, which is collagen and gelatin from, you know, a natural source with coconut? Well, of course, you know the answer to that. If you're going to build a strong, healthy body that produces energy, you've got to give it the raw building blocks it needs. And you've got to have oxygen. So many people sit down all day long and do not move. Talk about a disaster. I think they say that sitting or being sedentary in front of a computer screen is like the new cigarettes. And you know what they mean by that is, it's just about as damaging, if not worse, for the human body to sit down all day long than if you just smoked a pack of cigarettes. And you're probably thinking, that can't be true. Well, you look it up for yourself. Once you go to Google and type in, are there any studies that demonstrate being sedentary all day long is worse than smoking a pack of cigarettes a day? And you tell me what you come up with. There's a whole bunch of studies that have been observed. And of course, I always think to myself, why do we need these studies? Don't we have this figured out? Anyway, I've enjoyed being with you today. Lord willing, we'll get the phone lines fixed next week, and I'll be back, and we'll be good to go.